I really appreciate you doing this. It's yeah. Everybody's going to be so happy that
I'm glad we had time.
We finally pulled this off.
I know.
We got Becky and Chris last year. We weren't able to get Michael, but we did go to dinner with him and his mom, so that was great. And Aaron was sick, so.
Yeah.
But we got to meet everybody, so that was nice. No, it's been a long time since Joan of Arcadia, but you know what, still has a life on the internet. There's still fan forums. There's fan fiction being written still. I mean,
wow.
People still love the show. So we had a few questions that we wanted to ask you. We'll go ahead and jump to the most important one first, just in case we don't get to spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. I know that you've heard from everybody that the whole cheating scenario with Adam and Joan just broke everyone's heart. And we've talked to Chris a couple of times about it, and he said he was pretty upset with that storyline when you first shared the script. And we were just wondering how you felt about it.
Oh, man. You're going to be so mad when you hear me say this. But what was that storyline?
He just basically cheated with somebody he didn't even barely know.
Oh, that's right. He
ruined the whole thing.
Right. I think that stuff happens, and I think that the point of the show was to say, this is real life, things aren't perfect. I know people probably wanted that. I know a lot of people would write in and get angry about certain things, and Barbara Hall felt, sorry, that's life. We're trying to make an honest show about real things that happen to people, under the position of, you know, God is trying to direct you and help you in any way that God can. Whether you choose to listen or not is up to you. And I think that it was great. I wish that there had been more of that kind of stuff in there. But, you know, I think it was heartbreaking, but that's what it is, you know.
Do you think that what do you think would have happened in season 3, because they were setting up that whole, you know, bad guy versus Joan thing and...
I think that it probably was headed for a situation where, I mean, I don't think that our show was anything like Buffy, but I think that there was an element of it going into a, not a darker place, but more searching looking into dark versus light. Which that was a heavy theme for the show, but I think that they were really going to get into that and sort of have it so that Joan never knew if she was talking to the god or devil or the devil. So she didn't know, and it would have been, she would have gotten into all kinds of trouble. So
that's great. Do you think that they were going to turn her friends into like a Scooby gang type? I mean, were they all going to be told that she was talking to God and that these?
I think they were. They were kind of, that was kind of happening at the end of the second season, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they were,
the very last scene made you think that she was going to go and tell them.
Didn't she end up telling, doesn't she tell, Becky Wahlstrom's character? Or did that not happen? She never
didn't
tells anybody?
But, there were a lot of people say that they were going in that direction,
right.
That she, Grace would have probably been the first person that she told.
Right.
Wasn't really discussed?
No. Nothing was ever discussed. You got your script and you, you know. If there was anything, any larger themes, you know, I'd talk to Barbara about it. But that's television. I mean, you don't really go into the details of it unless there's a really big problem and or things are going really great, which are both of the cases for that show, for the, you know, supreme rise of it and the supreme fall.
Yep. Do you think there are any real Joan of Arcs out there?
Oh, yeah. There's thousands of them every day. There goes one.
I like that.
Huh? She was asking me if there's any real-life Joan of Arcs in the world, and I said, you're one.
Is that a compliment?
Yeah. Did you hear that? She said, is that a compliment?
Well, one of the things that we always enjoy so much about the show is the chemistry between you and Chris. It just seemed to click somehow.
Mm-hmm.
We've read some of the scripts, and one of the first things we noticed is that a lot of the little business between the two of you, looks and touches and things like that, weren't really scripted. So
yeah, no, they weren't.
We were just wondering if you had just such a good working relationship that it all just sort of fell into place that way? Or?
I would say, yeah, that I always felt like I still to this day feel like Chris hasn't been even challenged as an actor, which is a compliment.
Yeah, we feel the same way.
Meaning that I've never worked with anybody that was so emotionally available and just knew the direction that you were trying to take the scene in and was willing to follow you there emotionally. That doesn't happen.
Same could be said of you.
Yeah, but I hate to say it, but I'm a woman. It's a very different thing for a woman to go there than for not only a man, but a young man, a young actor, who are, for the most part, dealing and trying to extrapolate their own egos and sort of, figure out who they are and figure out their own masculinity. So for somebody of Chris's age at that time, I think we were both 21, 22, for him to just, be able to go there was pretty amazing.
We always felt that you guys were kind of robbed of even a chance at Emmys for the big breakup scene, because it was just beautifully acted by both of you. Just amazing stuff.
Yeah, that was a...
And honestly, that was the night that I just... he really just blew me away that night, because he was so wrecked.
Yeah.
So destroyed in that scene.
Yeah. What was the reason that there was the breakup?
Well, he cheated, and then you guys had that weird trial scene where it was this metaphor with Jack and the Beanstalk and stealing the golden goose and all that.
Oh,
and
yeah,
and you guys had this
that.
Big argument after the trial scene, and he just was completely destroyed. Well, you both were. But like you said, it was really intense seeing that from a guy, just seeing a guy so destroyed by his own action.
Yeah, I think too, and Chris and I were really, really close. We don't talk as much anymore, just because we've gone our separate ways, but we were very close, and when you work with someone, we worked long hours on that show. I don't know if he told you, but we would work anywhere from 16 to 17 hours every single day. And that's, it's a lot, and that's, I'm not saying 16, 17 hours where 10 of those hours you're being pampered, like I think most people think, actors are. Hell no, that is not the case.
I've worked really good in production, so I've seen how it really
is. And when you get into, Friday, and we're there together, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning, and you're so tired that your eyes are, sunken in, and you're trying to remember your lines, and, Chris and I would really watch out for each other, and we were really, really good friends. We'd prank each other. Oh, my God, we're the worst. Jason Ritter, too. Oh, my God. The worst I've ever experienced pranking. All those long hallway scenes where I'd be, rambling on like some crazy Lucille Ball, and you would never see it underneath the camera, but, Chris would slide out on the linoleum, and you'd have to step over him. Jason would do it, too, would try to, throw inanimate objects and fuck you up. Or a lot of the times, too, if you're, doing a scene in the locker and then, you shut the locker and you turn and say something to him and he'd have, some post-it stuck to his head that said, you're a douche.
He told us about it.
He couldn't keep a straight face, though. I could. I was a better liar than he was. He would instantly crack up.
He told us about the giant props, the big pickle and everything. He said he used to tease everybody with it. He would roll the pickle at Michael and mess him up when he had this loop dialogue,
Michael was our favorite to pick on. All three of us would just, and Becky would just shake her head. Aaron Himmelstein too, but Michael really was the most fun to pick on, just because he would lose his shit. He was quintessentially the best little brother. I have no brothers too, so it was really great having all those guys. And God, the amount of nipple twisting I did. Jesus Christ.
I heard about that.
I think I had... Do my phone on me? I'll show you this text I got from Jason Ritter. I don't think I'll have that.
Chris actually told us about the nipple twisting and the biting.
Yeah, I think there was biting,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
one time on set, I made him... He would die if he knew I told the story, but... I made him... We used to make each other laugh so hard, and Chris has got the kind of laugh that is like a roar. It's so infectious that it makes you laugh. And we got into... I forgot what it was that we did, but we were fucking around, and we were laughing so hard, and he farted. And that was it. It was like, we single-handedly shut down production for 15 minutes because my makeup was running off my face. I'd fallen on the ground, broke my mic pack, it was done. was done.
That's great. Thank you so much, because that's the best story anybody's told us so far.
Yeah, because he was already laughing so hard. Yeah, and we did, we used to do things. Jason was my favorite because we would torture Mary. Oh my God, poor Mary. But Jason was the best prankster by far of anybody, and he would do things where you'd have like a big emotional scene and like, you know, yelling at Joe or something, and Jason would be like the first one to go out of the room, and then I would keep yelling, and then I'd go out of the room, and Jason would be like in the back, like he would storm out of the room, and there he'd be in his chair like this. With one wheel spinning, he'd be like, like he fell over.
That's
and
evil.
Just with one wheel, I don't know why that's so funny to me, but every single time he would get me with doing something like that. Or he would do it, like go out the front porch, and then he would like slam the door, and like, you know, I'd turn, this happened numerous times, I'd turn to Mary. We're about to have like another page and a half of dialogue, and then he would take his chair and just throw it down the Girardi front porch, but it sounded like he died. Like it was just like bang, bang, like falling all over the stairs. And we would start laughing, and he'd go, oh, you know, make some horrible noise. Such a jerk. And then we'd have to, you know, cut and start over and do all that stuff.
He's a very bad boy.
We had a lot of fun.
Do you ever see any of them again at all? Or any?
You know who I see the most is Mary. I see Mary a lot.
I can't believe you just said that, because I was going to actually tease you and ask you if you could hook me up with her, because my one big thing is to, I would love to interview her, because she still talks so lovingly about the show.
Yeah. The end of it was the hardest for Mary. Mary cried a lot. Was very upset. Mary and Joe both, and I'll never forget Mary saying to me at the end when everyone was sort of like fighting to keep it. She said, you know, you'll never have anything like this. Trust me, you'll never have anything like this again. You should try as hard as you can to keep it. And she's right. I probably won't. I had my own reasons for feeling like the fight wasn't up to us, you know, no matter what we did. But that's another story. But Mary is, I see her all the time, and I just ran into her in New York. And I'm having my big L.A. release party on the 25th, and Jason's going to come.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great.
The only people that I don't ever see are Chris. I haven't seen Becky in years. I run into Barbara Hall every now and then. I see Joe a lot. But yeah.
It's not like you're not busy.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Well, you know, we also love the unusuals. And one of our friends has already actually written some fan fiction for that show as well.
Nice.
And we were just wondering, you know, how much fun that was to shoot, because, I mean, what a great cast.
It was like Joan of Arcadia. It was, everybody was very, very close, you know, and I've stayed close with everybody, with Kai, with Monique, Terry, Adam, Harold. Harold just came to one of my shows. They would all come to my shows at the Barry Poetry Club in New York. They all came. Terry Kinney was actually the most supportive of this book getting made, because when I submitted it to this publisher, which is a really tiny publisher, Manic D, out of San Francisco, they're very like prestigious, and they're very picky about who they print and or publish, and kept saying, I shouldn't submit it, I shouldn't send it in, I need to go with a bigger publisher, there's no way she's going to publish me, I'm too much of like a celebrity person in her eyes. And Terry was really the one who just encouraged me and would text me and be like, did you send it in yet? Did you email yet? And I did, and then she accepted it. So, you know, I love that guy a lot.
That's great to hear. He was one of my favorite people on Oz.
And it's
just so great to see him
go
into another show that Harold was also in.
Yeah, Terry's great, man. We all, he directed Reasons to Be Pretty, the Neil LaBute play on Broadway, which was recently nominated for a whole bunch of Tonys. He wasn't nominated. He should have been. But you know, we all band together at the end of the season and all signed a petition to make sure that he could get out. We all basically waived any requests to, like, get out on certain days for a month, so that we're like, put Terry above all of us. If he has to get out for something, it doesn't matter if I'm in the first scene and then I have the rest of the day off and I have to come in at 8 o'clock at night. Do whatever you can for him. That's the kind of atmosphere we
have. You guys
were
a real troop.
Yeah, everybody really, really, really loved each other. And to the point, though, where, like Joan of Arcadia, there was a lot of dicking around between scenes that just drove the first AD up the wall. Because it was basically like a social hangout where everyone was just like, you know, especially with Jeremy Renner and I, oh my God, with our foul mouths and making jokes and not listening.
Just yeah, like, you guys click really well, too.
It's like high school, yeah. Jeremy is, I'm really close to him and his girlfriend. I just texted him because he got nominated for that Gotham Award. I'm so happy for him. He invited me one night after work. He said, hey, I did this little film called The Hurt Locker they're doing a screening of it at IFC, and it's just it's a little thing we did last year if you want to come check it out. Oh, yeah, okay, sure. You know, he made it seem like it was no big deal. And I saw the movie, and I turned to him, and I still believe this, and I said it to him that night. I said, you're going to get nominated for an Academy Award.
Everything I've read, so
do
I can't
you know
wait
that?
To see it. Yeah.
And he gave his, you know, goofy laugh. Said, oh, fuck off.
I honestly think he has a huge, huge chance in the film.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kathryn Bigelow will, for sure, and the film will, for sure. He should, because what most people don't know about Jeremy, in all the articles I've read, they've made it seem like it's Kathryn Bigelow's, which it is, very much so, her film, but Jeremy is responsible, for the most part, in getting all those people together. He had the script first.
Did he?
He approached Anthony Mackie and then got producers on board, and they went after Kathryn Bigelow, so
it's
really Jeremy that did it, who worked really hard to get that movie made.
And I'm so glad they got her, too, because she's an amazing
visual.
She's
a powerhouse.
She really is.
She's so good.
Because she's a painter, her films are like art.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just gorgeous.
Yeah, very much so.
Great. Wanted to talk to you real briefly about Stephanie Daly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just thought your performance in that thing was just stunning.
Thank you.
I mean, it's a great little film, but you, I mean, if I didn't already know what you could do, that just knocked me sideways. And I got to tell you also, I love the commentary on the DVD.
Oh, yeah, I
you
forgot about that.
You are so hilarious on that commentary.
Oh, God.
And it's like
a
180 degree turn from the performance in the film.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
Right.
Look what I just noticed.
What?
Voices of Saints, Casebook for God. We're sitting in the right section, I think. That's just, isn't that kind of ironic?
Yes,
you did. That's great. I just looked over there and realized we're in the God section of the bookstore. Catholicism for Dummies. I wanted to ask you about Stephanie Daly. Is this a role that you went after, or did you just kind of get it, you know, by coincidence?
I read it. It took a little while to get made. The director wanted me. She was a fan of Joan of Arcadia. You know, that's the... So that was actually really Hilary Brocker that approached me. And then it was just, they took a minute to find their financing, and they had Tilda, and that was back when Tilda was still just a very cult actress.
Mm-hmm.
And Tilda, to this day, I think out of all the actresses I've ever worked with, I remain the closest with.
Wow.
Yeah, she and I are very, very, very close. In fact, I finished this book in Scotland at her house. I flew out there because I couldn't finish editing it. It was like the last process, the hardest process is, you know, the old saying, kill your darlings. And I couldn't, I just couldn't edit it. I couldn't cut stuff out. I had no vision. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing with it. So, and there's a few things that had happened that sort of made it possible to finish it. So, but yeah, it was really Hillary. And I think there's a lot of personal things that were going on in my life during that time that lent itself to the depth and vulnerability that's in that film. I don't know if I had been in like a really happy place, if I could have done it.
Yeah.
Maybe I could have. You never know. You never know what you're capable of. But I've actually, I think I've done my last Beyond a Reasonable Doubt type movie, and I'm going to go back to doing films like that.
Oh, great.
Just, you know, doing things that have more emotional edge as opposed to things that might or might not become a blockbuster hit. Mm-hmm. I just, they don't satisfy me. But I wanted to try them, just like I wanted to try doing, the horror movie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I did several of those and was like, I don't like this either.
So the heavy drama is kind of your favorite thing?
Yeah, I think it's very therapeutic in its own right. And if you find a good character, if you find something great, it can be a really powerful experience. It can be a very spiritual experience to go through that with the character that's already written on the page. And Stephanie was definitely that exact kind of thing.
How do you work your way up to that scene in the bathroom? I mean, that was just astonishing.
You did it very fast. You don't think about it a lot. I had talked to Tilda. Tilda talked to me. She had twins, as well as our director had also had twins. So I talked to them about the labor process, and I asked for a big bucket of ice water, and they would say rolling. They'd roll the cameras, and it was just in the stall. It was just me and David, our DP, with the camera, and like two lights in there, and he was in there. There was no one else, and they would say rolling, and I would stick my face in ice water for as long as I could hold my breath. Pull my face out, wardrobe woman would like pat it down with a towel, and I would go in, and a lot of it, I mean, a lot of it already, believe it or not, because you're not making any noises, because she's supposed to be silent, she doesn't want anyone to hear her, already forces you to get red and lightheaded, I almost passed out several times on the toilet there.
That rattling with the scream, that... Yeah. I mean, just that right there is so powerful.
There's not even a scream in it. It's just a sound.
Silent scream. You're totally silent the whole time, and you're rattling in your leg.
Yeah.
Oh. I've recommended the movie to so many people, and I tell them, do not look away in that scene.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's really hard not to, but you
people
owe
at
it to
got really. So we had a couple people that had to leave, that left the theater, you know, and then they kind of realized, I mean, maybe we shouldn't recommend this if you've ever had... If you've, like, lost a child or if you've had, you know, problems with a labor, it's probably not recommended to see that scene. It's rough.
Yeah. It sure is. I've gotten into a couple of discussions with people on the Internet who think Stephanie was raped. And I really didn't see that scene that way. Just saw it as a really bad first encounter with a jerk.
That is a complicated discussion. I think it's both. I think that yours is probably a little more correct. Most people would call that a date rape, you know, of a certain variation. But the truth of the matter is, as women, we know that it's probably either happened to us or it's happened to our friend. It's, I mean, one out of two women it happens to. They've had a very bad sexual experience, whether it's when they were children, whether it's their first time losing their virginity, whether they're adults, you know, it happens. So... And it's, you know, that particular thing is a very hard thing to define, but the fact that he takes this very vulnerable girl and he knows exactly what he's doing, and she doesn't at all, and they play that little game, which we sort of worked out in the room. That was also not scripted, the whole kiss my cheek here, and, you know, I said, well, what if, like, we do this kissing the cheek game, and then when you tell me to kiss your cheek, just turn and kiss me. And that will put us into the thing. Because there was kind of missing that moment in the script where she gets forced to then face that. And then it's like a deer in the headlights. No pun intended from that last scene. But, yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
There was also a lot of controversy about normal adolescent behavior. And I know that sort of made you angry.
At all.
Yeah. I just was wondering if we were even allowed to like it. Because I kind of do.
I don't want to talk about it at all.
That's a great answer. I also wanted to just touch on something really quick that I also asked Chris, and I don't know if it's a coincidence or what, but it seems like a lot of the work that you've both done deals with really heavy subject matter, like sex and death and God. Is that a coincidence, or are those the kind of stories that you kind of like and pursue?
Well, I think those are a lot of the things that I've done, but, I mean, the last, like, several movies I've done have been shit. I don't know where my head's been. I guess just in this book, but they're definitely not things I'm particularly proud of. But I think that is what I'm drawn to if it's there. You have to realize, though, you got to do a lot of hunting to find those kind of things. They don't just pop up, luckily. It takes years and years to find them, and you track them. I'm tracking several things right now that are really, really good. But you never know.
So that's not the majority of what you're offered, serious things like that.
No. I mean, it is sometimes, but you also have to fight for some of the things that you really want to do, because, you know, Evan Rachel Wood is alive and well, and she is also a very, very fine actress.
She really is.
She is. So it's hard when you're looking at two people and you're going, Well, you know, and Evan's done a lot of really big movies, and she's doing another great thing that I read right now. What I'm saying is there's plenty of actresses to go around, so you got to fight when you find
right.
something great.
Right. Competition's heavy.
Yeah.
So you mentioned at the book reading that you were writing the script.
I've been thinking about it. There's a book, which I don't want to say right now, but that's that I want to adapt, which I think would be perfect for me, and it's definitely a very Joan-style character, but not based in anything like of the, you know, mysterious spiritual realm, but it is about sort of a young lost girl. For some reason, I'm good at playing.
Have you written scripts before?
But I read a bazillion,
yeah.
And I feel like it's like, I feel like it would be like getting on a bike.
Yeah.
At this point.
Adaptations.
I see it all in my head, so.
Right.
I kind of just follow that idea.
Adaptation's really hard, but we'll warn you about that.
We'll see.
Because like you said, you have to kill your babies, and it's even worse when you have to kill somebody else.
Yeah, but I probably will be writing with my really good friend, Ed, who's a phenomenal writer, and, you know, he'll help me chop everything off. But the book reads like a movie. I mean, you wouldn't have to do anything crazy. It literally reads like a movie. And in fact, this writer had another movie written about one of her books, and it was a huge, big success. So
that's great. That's a blessing.
So her stuff is easily translatable in that sense.
Excellent. So tell everybody why they should buy your new book. what's wonderful about your new book?
Well, I think, you know, if you like me as an actress, there's a lot of pieces in here that were written on the set of normal adolescent behavior, of Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, of The Unusuals. There's a poem in there called Learning to Trust Legs, which specifically is about being, just about dressing up like a hooker and waddling around, I think I say in there, waddling around 7th and Avenue A in, you know, in the East Village.
Yeah.
With like a gun stuck to my hip and going like, is this fucking for real? This is what I do for a living. This is hilarious. So
that's
I wrote a poem about it. But there's a lot of personal family stuff in there, too. I think if you want to get to know me at all, then that's the best way. That's better than any interview I've ever given or will ever give. It's about my father. It's about my relationship with my stepsister. It's about my, you know, my mother and her relationship with my grandfather and my feelings about my grandfather. And there's a lot of family stuff in there, too. But also, you know, stuff about the biz. Some shop talk.
But well, we all love the first one, so I'm sure we're
gonna
yeah, the second.
Yeah, it's a good little book, too.
So when are you and your fellow spoken word artists going to take the drums inside your chest on the road, bring it down here?
Oh, man. I think it's going to go to New York in 2011.
Wow.
That's what's going to happen.
Got to widen that out a little bit.
I know. Do you have $3 million you'd like to give me? So I'll put that shit to use.
If I ever come up with it all.
Yeah, someday we'll be like a traveling circus. But for now, it's like we want to just make it a big enough event that people would come to Los Angeles to see it, and then we can also get bigger theater. Right now, we average about 400 to 500 people in that theater to come see it, which for a poetry show is pretty big.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely.
You know,
if we could ever arrange a trip out around when it's
yeah.
happening,
come check it out.
To
sure.
See it. So one more question. What's
okay.
next?
What's next is I did a film, Main Street, which is going to be really good. I'm hearing really strong things about it. It's the last thing Horton Foote wrote before he died. And it's myself, Orlando Bloom, Colin Firth, Ellen Burstyn, and Patricia Clarkson.
That's the Orlando Bloom movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's going to be a big movie for Ellen Burstyn. That's all I'm saying.
That's great.
It's
going
to be a big one.
That's great.
And for me, it's a great role, too. I sort of play like a young Ellen Burstyn, a woman who's been living in Durham her whole life, and she needs to get out, and she wants to get out. And Ellen is this woman who's lived there her whole life and doesn't want to leave, but has to leave because she has no money left. It's a true American story in the way that Horton writes. I mean, it's brilliant. So.
Yeah, I love his stuff.
There's that, and there's, you know, starting to get some pilot things in, but for television, but we'll see.
Great.
We'll see.
It's great. Is there sort of a projected idea of when that might come out?
I don't know. I think it's going to do the festival route. That's what I hear. Toronto and...
Next year?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then and then come out. So we'll see.
Great. So maybe tail end of next year we might get to see it.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. And John Doyle's, it's his first film, so I know he's taking his precious time, as he should, putting it together and really making it the vision that he wants. So, yeah, and I'm very lucky to be in a position where I don't have to run into doing another project. I'm really just going to wait to find, you know, another Stephanie Daly or something that I feel like is as valuable as that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm going to let you go because I need you. I know you're trying to get out of here, and we really appreciate it.
Of course.
So much.
And, I'm going to go text Jason now. Once now you made me miss him.
Please do that. Once we get it all
Did you
edited,
see his girlfriend's film?
The Dick, not yet. Not yet. It's
great.
It's starting to make the rounds, and all of our people are starting to see it. So
great.
We have one guy that
Mariana.
We have one guy that was telling us about it a week or so ago. He's seen it. One of our members has seen it so far, and we're all Netflixing it. So
it's very sweet.
Awesome.
It's good of you to support it.
Oh, of course. Everything all of you guys do, we
yeah.
are right there for. So
right,
much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Yes, of course.